The Tom Woods Show, episode 2069.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, folks, if you have had it up to here with the COVID irrationality, you are going to love my free ebook, COVID Charts CNN Forgot. Pick it up at chartstheyforgot.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm glad to have Dakota Christensen back on the program because I wanted to get an update on what's going on in Canada and what the prospects are for continuing to resist up there. And he did such a great job last time, and I got all my questions answered. I thought, let's give this another round. I solicited some questions from the supporting listeners group, the Tom Woods Show Elite. So if you're not a member of that yet, it is one of the many, many perks you get as a heartfelt thanks from me to you as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show. So your avenue into that group is supportinglisteners.com. Dakota, welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be on.
I feel ridiculous talking about any other topic right now, you know? I mean, this is what people are interested in, and it's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I mean, of course, this is absolutely one of the biggest stories in the world right now, and it's insane to think just what's going on in Canada, what most people would presumably expect to be a continuously free liberal democracy, and what we're experiencing is incredible to think that we're actually facing that. But yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, well, so I want to get an update on what's been happening. So obviously we've all seen Justin Trudeau invoke the so-called Emergencies Act, which apparently since its passage in 1988 has never been invoked.
Mm-hmm.
He used it in this case. And what we've seen since then, of course, the whole world knows about the freezing of bank accounts. We're hearing about family members saying they're having difficulty banking. They're threatening truckers with having their licenses removed, so their ability to make a living destroyed permanently, crippling them with six-figure fines. And these are the types of measures that were taken. So what's the result? What's happening now? Do we say this was a defeat? Is there another plan? Is there a plan B? Is there stuff going on in other parts of Canada outside of Ottawa? What can you tell us about?
Yeah, so the situation right now, like you said, Justin Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act, which the Emergencies Act itself has never been invoked before. Its predecessor was called the War Measures Act, and Justin Trudeau's father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, actually did invoke that when he was prime minister. And that was in the 70s when we had literal domestic terrorists who were actually murdering people. And, you know, it was also a very controversial decision then to invoke the War Measures Act to bring in the military to deal with these domestic terrorists. But they were actually domestic terrorists who were setting off explosions and killing people and, you know, members of parliament in Ottawa. We now are seeing Justin Trudeau invoking this Emergencies Act unilaterally. Any sitting government can invoke this, but there is a clause in it where it within 7 days, it will automatically expire unless parliament debates it and votes on it. And so we're experiencing that right now. Over this weekend, they have been debating it. And the initial vote on whether or not the Emergencies Act will continue, as in Justin Trudeau will continue to have these incredible powers, is this evening. And so there's a debate going on as we speak. It's currently Monday afternoon. They're in the House of Parliament right now and the House of Commons debating this. And it is expected to pass because Justin Trudeau and his Liberal Party, currently they are a minority government. They don't have the majority vote on their own, but they do have the support of the NDP, the New Democratic Party, which is the left-wing Socialist Party of Canada. And so even though the Conservative Party and the Bloc Québécois, the party, the Separatist Party of Quebec, they both are sort of together in this very interesting alliance because they don't normally get along, but to oppose this Emergencies Act, but together, the Liberal Party and the NDP have a majority. And so with their support, it's expected to pass this evening. And so they're still debating that. But that is the first, because we have a bicameral legislature, right? So we have our House of Commons, which is the initial legislature, and then there's the Senate. It would still have to pass. But even throughout this whole process, Justin Trudeau still has these powers. The moment he invoked the Emergencies Act, he gave himself the powers, and it will only expire if they don't debate and vote this through. But in the meantime, he's doing incredible damage.
So what's the next step for people who favor the cause of the truckers? Is there any? Is there something else? What are they saying now? I mean, do you get a sense of, is it, well, look, the overwhelming power of the state is such that there's just no way we can possibly overcome it if they really do impose it on us like this. So we're going to have to flex to a plan B, or are we just spooked by this and we just have to concede defeat?
Yeah, I mean, of course, no one's giving up the fight. We are now seeing civil liberties associations launching lawsuits to try and have this shut down through the courts. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association, which typically is, it's a very left-wing civil liberties, you know, oriented organization who didn't say a peep throughout all of the vaccine mandates and the lockdowns, and they didn't oppose any of that. But this is even enough to really make them say, okay, we have to stand up. So they're launching a challenge to this through the courts. We have so many who are trying to think of different ways to try and defeat this. But at the moment, it seems like the most immediate way would be through the legislature, but that itself is very difficult. But again, we see Justin Trudeau right now and his Liberal Party doing incredible things with financial sanctions. They're freezing bank accounts. They have incredible police powers. I mean, the thing that's been on my mind the most this weekend is the incredible sights we're seeing, the overreach from police, because we've called in police forces from all across Canada to Ottawa to help enforce this. And there has been incredible brutality from the police against peaceful protesters. And Justin Trudeau made such a point of, well, we're not using these emergency powers to call in the military. You don't need to worry. But we have fully armed, militarized police in the streets of Ottawa who have been absolutely brutal. They've had mounted units trampling protesters. They've had officers with, you know, tactical rifles beating protesters with the butts of their service rifles. We've had our own journalists have been pepper sprayed and tear gassed and beaten. We're launching our own lawsuit right now. One of our journalists, Alexa, she was covering this in the Capitol. She got shot in the leg at point blank range with a gas canister, and she was beaten by an officer with a baton. We're seeing journalists targeted repeatedly throughout this, and hardly a peep from the Canadian mainstream media. It's been incredible to watch all of this happen. But that's another thing that's very concerning, especially because on Friday was the very first day they were set to debate this in the legislature, and they suspended Parliament because of the police action to move in and clear the streets of Ottawa. And so because they were too busy using the incredible powers of the Emergency Act on Friday to enforce these new powers, they weren't able to debate whether or not the powers should be used in the first place. So we're seeing some incredibly concerning things for Canada's democracy right now. And yeah, it's a struggle because every attempt we've had to try and defeat this so far seems to come up to a roadblock. And it's just, you know, the courts have been of very little help through the entire pandemic when all of our civil liberties have been eroded repeatedly. And it's just, it's quite a pickle. So we're doing everything we can to try and move through the courts here and try and find a judge that isn't overtly politicized. But it's also a very slow-moving process. And I think our best hope now, a lot of people are saying, you know, we're trying to gain support of our elected representatives and try and sway them to perhaps move away from their party leaders and break party lines and vote their conscience rather than protect their own interest and careers. But it's a very difficult situation, and it's hard to sit back and just watch this all happen, but it is what's happening.
What is the situation with people who made modest donations to the truckers? So we've seen some of them shamed in the media because their information got out. But is anything going to be done to them in terms of an official government type of sanction?
Yeah, well, that is absolutely a major concern of so many people, because this is just, you know, like, it's insane to think that you would have to be concerned for the status of your own bank account because you gave a $50 donation to a crowdfund for a protest. But that is kind of where we're at. And we've asked the officials who are in charge of the enforcement of these incredible powers to impose financial sanctions on Canadian citizens who have done nothing but donate to a crowdfund. But we've asked, and some of them have said, well, it kind of depends. Like, you know, normally if you're just the average person who donated before it was declared illegal, you should be all right. But if you're someone who's making significant donations to what one official called a Trump-led movement or something like that, Trump-inspired movement, then you should be concerned about your bank account, which there's a bit of an uproar there. But what's incredible also has been statements from the Ottawa police, which throughout this entire thing, they've been, their full PR team on Twitter has been incredible to watch. It's been complete doublespeak. Everything we see happening on the ground, them using tear gas and beating protesters, they've been saying, nope, no gas was used. Oh no, our police have been perfectly professional. It's quite incredible to watch. But yesterday they released a statement saying, if you are involved in this protest, And I'm quoting here directly. If you are involved in this protest, we will actively look to identify you and follow up with financial sanctions and criminal charges. And it's just we have these police who are out of control, and they're promising to hunt down Canadian citizens who have been involved in this peaceful assembly of Canadians that has just been declared illegal unilaterally by our government.
I'd like to say that it's shocking, but it's not, that other Western countries are sitting by silently as this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, well, on that front, there's two ways I look at this. Like you say, there are so many, you know, supposedly liberal, Western, free democracies out there who have been completely silent on this and have even gone to bat for Trudeau and justified his actions. But it has also been heartening for me to see that the rest of the world is seeing who Justin Trudeau really is, because this is something where he's had this facade of this, you know, peaceful, loving, liberal, good-hearted, standing up for the little guy sort of politician. But he has been a petty tyrant the whole time, and his true colors are really being shown to the world. And it's been very heartening for me to see those who are recognizing this and calling it out, especially in the States, like looking down to you guys down south of us, our closest allies and neighbors who do have a genuine appreciation for liberty. And it's very heartening to see so many looking up to us and actually seeing, wow, this is actually going on. And the calls of solidarity and calls for action and help. I mean, it was a congresswoman, I believe, from New Mexico, who put out a statement saying that she'd be introducing a motion in the legislature to allow for Canadian protesters who have been persecuted by our government to come and claim political asylum in the United States, to come as political refugees from our government, which it's incredible we've gotten to that point. But I found that, oh yeah, I've got it here. It was Representative Yvette Harrell, who said, I'm introducing legislation that would temporarily grant asylum to innocent Canadian protesters who are being persecuted by their own government. We cannot be silent as our neighbors to the north are treated so badly. And I mean, I saw that and that just makes me think it's incredible to see the solidarity there. And it gives me a little bit of hope that, you know what, if we can still have some strong liberty-loving patriots down south who are willing to go to bat for us, maybe not all is lost.
Is it the case that you guys at Rebel News are banned from Justin Trudeau's press conferences?
Oh, absolutely. This has been an ongoing issue for a number of years now. For the past two federal elections, we've had to take the government to federal court to allow us just to cover the federal leaders' debates for our federal elections. And both times we've won. And so we've had Justin Trudeau in the most recent federal election this past fall in 2021, who, when we asked him a question during this debate, after having gone to federal court and had a federal judge order him to let us in because we are a legitimate news media organization who has a right to be there just like everyone else, he denounced us and called us purveyors of misinformation and disinformation, and he refused to even call us a media organization with, you know, a whole bunch of disdain. But it's interesting to see that happening, and absolutely, this has been a problem for us for years. We've had to fight tooth and nail to get into everything because we've been denounced as essentially fake news and delegitimized by anyone who's not in the insiders club of the government-funded media. It's always a struggle of independent media in Canada to get in, especially since Trudeau took power.
Well, speaking of that, do you have the impression that the rest of the world is getting an accurate picture, or do you have a feeling that the rest of the world is buying into that truckers represent a tiny minority of dangerous people?
Yeah, well, I think it depends who is looking and what sources they're looking to. If you're someone who's looking purely at the mainstream corporate legacy media of Canada, then you're absolutely not getting an accurate picture because they have been going to bat for the government repeatedly. They are essentially government arms of the government propaganda machine rather than genuine media because they're on the government payroll. They're already quite biased towards Trudeau. A lot of them are big fans of Trudeau, these legacy journalists. And if you're looking on social media for sort of grassroots people who are on the ground there showing the whole truth, if you're looking to independent media like ourselves and just a handful of other organizations in Canada, then, you know, you can get the side of the story that is not being told by any of these other ones. So I think it just depends where you're looking. So it's nice to see a lot of the more Republican-leaning Americans and even a lot of moderates who are watching this go on online and are looking to other independent media I've seen. They're the ones who I've seen being outspoken about a lot of the atrocities they've seen happening. But others who aren't looking through that lens at all, they're not getting the full picture. But I think it's been beneficial for independent media like ourselves, who have seen incredible growth throughout all of this, just because we're the only ones out there who are trying to tell the whole story of what's going on, rather than the very narrow focus of the entire conglomerate of government-subsidized media in Canada.
Trudeau's numbers have not been that good, as poll numbers, but it's hard to know whether that's entirely because of sympathy with the truckers. It could be people who, before the Emergencies Act was invoked, were frustrated at his fecklessness and inability to do anything about it. So the negative view of Trudeau could be for diametrically opposed reasons. I'm very interested in tracking, to the extent possible, the evolution of public opinion on this. So now that he has done this, has this taken some of the wind out of the sails of the truckers? And has it generated more support for him? Is there any way to know that yet?
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't been looking at the polling too closely, like, because this story is moving so fast.
Yeah.
The last polls I was looking at, is it has been detrimental for Trudeau. I believe the last time I was looking at polls was last week. Justin Trudeau was polling at 16% support, which is atrociously low compared to the fact that we just had another election that he just won in September of 2021, and that he got, I believe, 32% of the popular vote. So lower than he did in the election before that. But even still, a drop from in the actual vote, 32%, to now polling at 16% is incredible. And that's only been in a matter of weeks that his numbers have dropped so low during all of this. So I think it's very fair to point to the fact that this entire movement with the truckers has helped to really sink support for him, and also support for the ongoing COVID restrictions. Because I believe we were talking about this last time I was on the show, about how much support there was among the Canadian populace for continued restrictions with the vaccine mandates and with lockdowns and whatever restrictions the public health arm of the government saw fit to impose upon the population. Now it's showing the majority of people are in fact in favor of ending these mandates and restrictions, which is, you know, I think it's remarkable how people have started to, it's kind of flipped a switch in their brains to think, you know what, no, we should be ending this now. I mean, the rest of the world is going back to normal today as we speak. I believe the UK and England, Boris Johnson has said that all mandates are and restrictions are being lifted. Today is the date. And the rest of the world is starting to get back to normal. And we're still stuck in as if it's the spring of 2020, back when the world had no idea what they were dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to take a trip to London later this year, if it really is the case that I can do it.
Yeah,
I really would love to do it. Have there been any obvious effects related to the supply chain that people have reported on as a result of the truckers?
I mean, we were already having, of course, supply chain issues before this, and that's not unique to us here in Canada. But there was absolutely reported disruptions in the supply chain, specifically due to the vaccine mandate being imposed on the truckers. I'm not sure there is enough in terms of just those who decided to drive to Ottawa to cause, you know, significant disruptions or anything like that. But it was already reported on that because of those unvaccinated truckers who were sidelined from the mandates, that was just putting more strain on an already severely strained supply chain system that was not doing great to begin with. So there have absolutely been effects. And depending on where you are, there have been some empty shelves seen in stores and the like. I think most people, the average person, isn't as affected relative to what's already going on. But I mean, it also depends on what sort of industry you're dealing with here, what sort of products you're looking to get your hands on. I mean, myself, I actually ordered a new car back in November, and I'm still waiting on that. But yeah, there have been lots of issues with supply chain. And of course, it's a global issue right now. But in Canada, yeah, we have seen, it has been reported on some issues from the truckers specifically.
It's interesting to me the extent to which this protest and the government response are now provoking the kinds of thoughts that I, as a radical libertarian, could not have dreamed that the masses would one day have. But whether they're thinking this way explicitly or not, on some level, they have to be wondering in their minds, supporters of the truckers,
mm-hmm.
there has to be a better way than a system that can freeze my money if I am politically unpopular. There has to be. And so as a radical libertarian, I've always said, I want the separation of money and state. I don't want the state being involved with the money because it's just too dangerous and it's a terrible custodian of money. And now, well, that's exactly the kind of question people have to be asking. that if the government is in charge of it, and if the government can just intervene in the banking system to order the banks around, this is not the optimal situation. So we have to think of building parallel alternative types of institutions, and we just have to build them society-wide to protect ourselves against people like the Trudeaus of the world and the useful idiots who cheer him on.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think that is number one, the most concerning issue with this Declaration of the Emergencies Act and with Trudeau here and his deputy prime minister and finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, the financial aspect of this. You're absolutely right. I think a lot of people are looking at this in kind of shock and horror that then they're coming to the realization that with the stroke of a pen, the government can suddenly decide to take all of my money. They can freeze my bank accounts. They can essentially say, no, you can't participate in society. And especially in Canada, there's a very top-down control of government, control of the financial institutions and the banks. And they've been trying to also be seizing crypto wallets, and they do have power over cryptocurrency exchanges. But it was funny. I saw one crypto company, they received an order from an Ontario court to freeze some of the assets of some individuals. And the response was, I'm sorry, you don't quite understand how cryptocurrency works. And we help our clients get set up with cryptocurrency. We don't control their finances. So we can't do anything for you. Go look elsewhere. And, we'll help you out too when you turn to us eventually. But
I read that letter. It was so great. It was, please look up, how these things work. It's just so funny.
So good. But absolutely, it has so many people really thinking, wow, this is a problem in our society when anyone with an authoritarian streak in them can decide, you know what, let's go seize that person's money. Let's, control. Because when you can control someone's finances, you can control everything about their life. I mean, that is incredible. And we see all the governments of the world trying to move to their own government-controlled digital currencies, which is concerning. And I think we're also seeing a rise in the, people turning more towards cryptocurrency, thinking, wow, is this really the only way to avoid complete top-down control of finances? And, which leads almost to a social credit system of where, well, if you do something your government doesn't like, they can punish you in so many ways, first and foremost, through your finances.
Hey folks, this episode is sponsored by Skillshare. The online learning community is offering our listeners a 1-month free trial. Make 2022 a year of new learning, growth, and connection through creativity with online classes from Skillshare. One membership gets you access to thousands and thousands of fascinating classes on topics including illustration, design, photography, animation, productivity, and more. For you Instagram people, there's Video for Instagram. Tell an engaging story in less than a minute. Or portrait photography, shoot and edit Instagram-worthy shots. I'm not on Instagram, but I'd love to shoot and edit Instagram-worthy shots. And look, whether you're a dabbler or a pro, a hobbyist or a master, you're creative. And that's why Skillshare has classes for every skill level. It's got short lessons, hands-on projects, classes designed for real life. You can tap into that creativity you know is in there. Skillshare helps you move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold. You'll create real projects and get the support of fellow creatives so you can accomplish real growth. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get a 1-month free trial. That's 1 month free at Skillshare.com/woods. Just to help me understand the political culture of Canada a little bit better, in the United States, of course, we have the 50 states, and some of them are quite similar to each other. Some are quite different. So, for example, New York and New Jersey, they're going to have very similar political opinions, and so are Alabama and Mississippi. Mm-hmm. But if I compare California and Florida, I'll see stark differences, or California and some parts of the South or the Midwest or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there are parts of the U.S. where the COVID regime has had only a relatively minimal impact, and parts where people have gone completely out of their minds. Mm-hmm. So has the same been true of Canada? Because the impression we get in the U.S. is that Canada has been really, really irrationally locked down and crazy no matter where you go. Mm-hmm. Is that the case, or have there been some provinces that have been better than others?
Oh, you are absolutely correct. That impression is unfortunately correct in terms of It's shocking because in principle, we should be far more decentralized than we are in our control. We do have a separation of federal and provincial powers, as you know, you would see in the states between at the state and the federal level. Recently, we have seen a lot more federal overreach. What's been very concerning with the COVID response is just seeing all of the premiers in charge of every province in Canada moving almost in lockstep in terms of imposing COVID restrictions, where they've been almost the same across the board. There have been small differences here and there, and at some points where some provinces have been more open than others, but almost universally, they just say, nope, I'm following the advice of our chief medical officer who's, you know, giving me the recommendations from the public health arm of the government, and I'm just going to do what they say. And there's been no pushback on that. And so we've just seen universally every single premier, and even going back on their words, we've had people like Jason Kenney, who's the premier of Alberta, and Doug Ford, who's the premier of Ontario. They both said before instituting any vaccine passports, saying that they would never do that. They swore up and down, they're not going to create a split society, Doug Ford said. Jason Kenney said he didn't even know what a vaccine passport was and he would never institute it. And yet a few months later, they go ahead and say, you know what, the situation has become so severe, it's time to do this. We need to implement this. I can't help but think there has to be someone pulling the strings here of each of these premiers who are supposed to be the ones in charge, accountable to no one but those who elected them. And yet there they are moving almost in lockstep to impose these measures on the populace with, you know, no sort of real difference between any of them. So that's been a very concerning theme throughout all of this, the pandemic response, and it's been shockingly uniform across the country.
You know, and then I saw that video, I'm sure you saw, a couple minutes long of Doug Ford very recently saying, look, we're done with it. We followed the rules, 90% of us, and we're just done with it. None of this makes sense. And he went on this big thing. Look, nobody wants to be wearing these masks and this and that. Now, I know that politicians will say certain things when elections are coming up. I mean, I understand how that works.
Yeah.
But I almost wouldn't have changed a single word if I were saying the things that he was. If I were at that press event or whatever it was, I would have said almost exactly what he said. So it's not like he just suddenly became 10% better. It's like he suddenly turned into me. Now, unless he thinks that's going to win him votes, I don't see why he does that. But if he does think that's going to win him votes, why has he been doing this stuff in the first place?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I feel like in that moment, my impression, I mean, you can never know because to the degree I had any amount of trust in the words that someone says when they're a politician who's holding office and trying to win votes, that has been destroyed because we had him saying almost the exact same thing previously of, oh, we're never going to do any of this. This would be wrong. I'm so opposed to this. And then do it anyways, just a couple months later. But seeing that, I feel like that was a moment of Doug Ford just being genuine of, you know, expressing how he really did feel. And then because I feel like at this moment, it is politically prudent for him to do so. So he was allowed to say, you know what, we're just done with this. It's time, trying to appeal to his voters to say, you know what, this is why we're doing this. Because there is a very large swath of Canadian society who are they've been so affected by almost the cult of the COVID restrictions where they're decrying anyone opening up and they're saying, no, you're putting us all at harm. We don't know what's going to happen when you lift all these restrictions. You're being irresponsible. We need to stay locked down and forced to have masks on and forced to take these vaccines and boosters. But I feel like for Doug Ford, that was a moment of him just expressing how he really felt. And he said some things that if anyone else had said a few months ago on the internet, they would have been shut down about, well, you know, these vaccines don't really stop transmission. And well, the passport doesn't really make sense at all. So, you know, it's time to get rid of this. We're all tired of this. I feel like that was him just being honest for a moment. And he himself, I can only imagine, has been under so much strain when I imagine he personally disagrees with everything he's done, but has had another reason to do so in terms of implementing all of these very, very harsh measures.
That is exactly the impression I had. And I say that as somebody who's very cynical when it comes to politicians. They almost seem like they're a different species from the rest of us, that they don't have normal emotions the way we do. But that is exactly, unless he is a Hollywood actor, you know, who deserves an Oscar, that seemed pretty darn sincere to me. It seemed unrehearsed, unplanned. So anyway, that was at least something. So I wrote a little something about it in my email newsletter. I got all these Canadians saying, he's a bum, you know, whatever. You know, we can't stand this guy. And I guess, sure, if I had had to you know, live in Ontario during this time, I probably wouldn't have a lot of sympathy for him either. But my point was, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, if he's making the calculation that it's politically helpful for him to say this, that's news. Mm-hmm. You know, that means something has changed.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I mean, we're seeing across the board now of, you know, all of the premiers are starting to move in that direction. And like I was kind of saying earlier, it seems almost like each of these premiers has been doing this against their conscience. I mean, if they have a conscience, how could they not be with how wrong everything they've been doing is? But it seems like some of them, for example, Scott Moe, the premier of Saskatchewan, my impression, because shortly, in the middle of the whole trucker rebellion in Ottawa, he basically said, "We've heard you, we're ending this," which is remarkable because every other premier has said, "Okay, we're ending restrictions, but that's only because that's what the science tells us to do. That's the advice I've gotten from
right." Has nothing to do with the truckers.
Nothing to do with the truckers. Whereas Scott Moe, he said, "You know what? No, we've heard you. I'm taking a stand. I'm putting my foot down. I'm saying no," which is odd because, you know, aren't you the one who's been in charge of this the whole time? But I feel like, you know, there has to be someone pulling their strings, giving them orders, whatever it may be. And those now seems like they're finally, at least for Scott Moe, it seemed like he was taking a principled stand and saying, "No, I'm finally going to sort of repent of what I was doing and follow my conscience now." And the others. So it's interesting. And absolutely, there's the political effect there in terms of public opinion has significantly swayed. This whole movement has seen so many dominoes fall, which has been very encouraging. And so the display of incredible authoritarianism and outright tyranny coming from Justin Trudeau and the federal Liberals, who are desperately grasping at extreme power now. It seems like they're desperate because they are dealing with a people in revolt, and it's very divisive. There are diehard people on both sides, but I feel like generally there has been a lot of movement for public opinion to be against the lockdowns, the restrictions, the mandates, and a lot of people waking up to just how unacceptable the authoritarian ways of the Canadian government has gotten over the past years.
Well, the key thing that remains to me is the issue of travel in and out of Canada becoming free once again. And that's something that, unfortunately, the premiers can't do. And you have to rely on Justin Trudeau, unfortunately, or whoever follows him.
Exactly.
So we'll see. Because I'd love to. There are so many good, decent folks up there who have suffered a lot. And I'd love to. The only time I've been able to visit is just extremely briefly on a cruise excursion. I've never really had a proper trip to Canada. And as a matter of fact, I had one planned for Toronto in August of 2020 that, of course, I couldn't take. So I'd love to have that, but I'm not going to comply with crazy requirements just to get to Canada. So we'll see. It's amazing to me that what they've done in the UK is to say, if you're vaccinated, you can come in and you don't even need to be tested. If you're unvaccinated, you can come in, you have to be tested, but there's no quarantine anymore unless your test is positive. So in other words, he's saying the unvaccinated can come on in. Unvaccinated people coming to the UK are not a political constituency for Boris Johnson. They cannot vote for him.
Yeah.
There is no sympathy for these people anywhere. They have no representation, nothing. And he expended political capital on behalf of letting unvaccinated people come in. It's something you could just not imagine happening in Canada or the U.S. right now. So I plan to take advantage of that, spend a little money over there, and visit some old friends. So let's hope someday we can say the same about Canada, and I'll get up there, and I'd love to say hello to some of you good folks at Rebel News. Tell people the website again.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us at rebelnews.com, and everything, all of our work is published there. We've got a lot of, you know, areas on the site you can go to. Convoyreports.com is our vanity URL that kind of takes you directly to our page for all of our coverage of the truckers movement. But yeah, find us Rebel News, rebelnews.com. Find us on all social media channels, Rebel News, and you can get our coverage of all the stuff going on and the craziness that is currently Canada.
Well, I appreciate once again you at the last minute coming on here to give us an update on what's happening. And let's just, keep the pressure on and hope for some good news. As I say, it's been nice to hear some good news coming out of some of the provinces. And let's just hope that trend becomes overwhelming. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much. As always, my pleasure to be on.
All right, folks, before I let you go, what a small world it is. A guy I went to the prom with, and I know that was going to come out wrong. He was not my date. I just meant that we took the same limo and we wound up at the event at the same time and we sat at the same table for dinner. I went with somebody named Debbie. That's not the point. But anyway, this guy went to the prom with, his cousin has an ambient metal band. And I got to know one of them a couple years ago when he wrote to me and said, hey, I've been listening to your show. And it turns out, oh yeah, I was sitting at the same prom table with your cousin all those years ago. Well, what's he been doing other than being the cousin of a guy I sat at the prom table with? He has this band, 66 Steps. It's him, his guitar player, and then the wife of Metallica's bassist. And the way they describe themselves is as follows. They say, 66 Steps appeals to people who enjoy raw, beat-driven mood music with skeletal elements of post-punk. So check them out at 66steps.com. Why not? Tom Woods Show listener, why not? 66steps.com. That's 66steps.com. So the number, 66steps.com. So I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/2069. And of course, you know the drill here. You're thinking of starting a website. You want to get publicity from all Woods. Well, follow the steps first before you do anything. Go to tomwoods.com/publicity, and I will do lots of free things for you to help you out and make your site a success. So again, check that out at tomwoods.com/publicity. Our old friend Saifedean returns to the show tomorrow. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.